Hey guys, it's Thomas here for episode 104. All right, gonna go ahead and give you the warning right now. This is adjusting my mic. Of course, I wait till recording. I'm very professional. I wait till I'm recording to adjust my mic, make noises. This is gonna be a heavy amount of life updates and news and stuff. So if you're just looking for the awful, terrible Chronicles, Second Chronicles, then go ahead and fast forward a certain amount. Can't tell you how much right now. Can't be sure about that, Peter. Okay, so as hopefully many of you have seen on Facebook, and if you're not on the Facebook, get on the goddamn Facebook, please. Your favorite podcat, Mr. Kitty, he's very sick. He's only a year and a half, and it's really sad. And he just one day just, well, not one day, but he was getting slower. We're noticing he was just kind of slowing down. We thought it was just because the new kitten is tiring him out. And then he just like totally stopped doing anything. And like he tried to jump on something and just like didn't even make it. When before he was high jump champion of the world. It's a really athletic cat in his prime. And so anyway, you know, we took him in and they thought maybe he just had a blockage, you know, like he swallowed something, but so we were trying to, you know, do all that. Long story short, it's looking like now it's something else, but also the vet, at first we thought he was just dead because the vet said it was either, one of two incurable cat diseases because she noticed his heart was like messed up and not beating properly. So she thought that was the reason for everything. And then it turned out we were pretty much, you know, we got the news and, apparently I love my cat because I've been just a kind of a mess all day because we thought he was just dead. And then they said we can do an x-ray just in case to see if it's something else. And of course, it's just money that I, you know, don't really have right now. And although the donations that I've gotten have been very helpful. Thank you guys a lot. And anyway, we decided to do the x-ray. And then so that it's looking like it's not like the heart condition might be secondary. It might be something that he's probably going to eventually die of anyway. But it looks like it might not be what's causing the problem. Might be like something else. So it could be, I mean, it was kind of good news. It could be that we can, you know, if we're willing to spend enough podcast donation money, if I get enough donations, I can, you know, fix this first thing. I'm having to force feed him. Anyone, if you've ever had to force feed a cat, geez, it's not easy. Cats are really good at not doing whatever they don't want to do. They're just like, no, don't want to, not going to do it. But yeah, so before I was hesitant to force feed him because I thought he was blocked up and I thought I was just going to make him explode, you know? And so he hadn't been getting enough to eat. And then that's been kind of making him worse. But now that I know he needs to eat, it's game on. I'm just shoving the crap down his throat until he's better because I want my kitty to be better. So, yeah, I posted on the Facebook. If you were on the fence about donating, I know there's bigger problems in the world than my cat, I understand. But he's been on the podcast a lot. He's sort of the official podcat. And I really want to keep him around for another, as long as, you know. If it was a question of days, I wouldn't bother, but he should be able to be okay for a length of time, and then maybe they can do something about the heart thing. But so it's looking like it's curable, but the donations have really helped. All the donations I've received thus far on the podcast are a lot less than the vet bills I've already had. So don't worry about, like, it's, you know, don't be under the illusion that you don't need to donate. Because it's really helpful. It adds up, especially if we're already having to kind of turn down stuff because we can't do it, but you know, anyway, and then sorry for the heavy cat related stuff. And then, the other thing I wanted to say is I've just had a million thoughts while I've been going through this. For one, like I said, I feel really embarrassed because I was at work. We were both at work at the same place. And they called us with the results. And you know, we were talking about what we wanted to do. We were really sad. And Lydia was, of course, a mess. And it's sort of like a relationship cat. Like, it's like we got him right when we got together. And he's been, you know, so it's probably more than just the cat. It's just like, you know, it's been our history of together with this cat. And so then we decided, okay, we're going to try to do the x-ray. And so I went back in to tell my supervisor, like, hey, you know, I just started there like a few months ago. I don't have like any time, but I was just going to, I don't know, try to make it up or something. And so I started to ask her, and then I just started crying like a baby. Cause I don't know why. I feel really dumb, but I'm so sad about this cat, you know, and I feel embarrassed and thought I'd tell you guys. Cause you know, that's who else do I have to talk to? And so she's like, yeah, just go, just whatever, just go now. Cause I was going to try to, stay as late as I could so that I didn't have a bunch of time to make up. She's like, yeah, we'll figure it out. Why don't you just go? Which is nice, you know, but I also feel embarrassed and it's, you know, but what am I supposed to do? Not cry my eyes out when I think my cat is dead. At that point, I was 95% sure my cat was just dead. And it's like, yeah, it's really sad. And I, you know, humans, so I was having a lot of thoughts about it. And this is, guys, the Bible is not interesting right now. We're almost done with Second Chronicles. So I will, maybe it will get more interesting and I'll stop, you know, talking so much. But like I said, I already gave you the warning. So if you're still listening and you're pissed at me, I warned you, you should have skipped ahead or whatever. So whatever, I'm done feeling bad for you people. I got a dead cat here. I got a dying cat here. So anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, I was just positive he was dead. And I was just so many thoughts as I was so sad. I was thinking, like, it's, my first thought is like, if God existed, humans are so much better than God. Like, if I just pretend, okay, yeah, God, yeah, whatever, Christian version of God, yeah, he totally exists, whatever. Humans are so much better because for millions of years, just countless animals just die. They get diseased, they get eaten, you know, and it's like they don't know what's happening. The cat, my poor little cat, he just sits there. Like, he doesn't know that he's, like, in really bad health, and if it weren't for humans, he'd be dead already, probably. It's just, you know, and what a great system, God. Good job. And I'm sure Christians will say, like, well, he made us so that we could come. Yeah, well, it's a little late, you know, like millions of years of things just eating each other. And it's not like things are all fine and dandy now. I mean, maybe it's foreseeable. It's reasonable that maybe in like 100 years, 200 years, when technology is just so unreal, maybe we just fix everything and like the world's perfect. Honestly, it could happen. It might take a while, or we'll just run out of resources and just be terrible and everything will suck. But either way, like, nice timing, God. Like, just go ahead and let everything be terrible, just horrible, like, you know, disease and death and primitive humans, early humans, even like 1,000 years ago, how crappy was it for everybody? You know, they just get disease and just die and get eaten by stuff, really painful stuff. It's horrible. If there is a God, he's terrible. He's the worst. And don't give me that, oh, it'll be okay. Once you die, then it's all fine. You go to heaven or whatever. What is the point of that? Let's just skip to that then. How about we do that? Just skip to that part. If you, like, why does he have to, like, torment us in this terrible existence so that later everything will be, like, perfect? How about make everything a lot better all the time? Maybe take some of the perfection from heaven, just borrow a little bit of that, and just make heaven, like, yeah, mostly perfect, but sometimes your coffee's a little off, you know, it's not strong enough or something. And then use some of that goodness to come down here and maybe make things not die painfully for no reason. How about that? Maybe balance it out just a little bit. So anyway, yeah, I was just thinking it was, you know, it's, humans are also wired such that the things they can see, they're, you know, we're really good at being, what's the stupid word? I've had a rough day. Really good at, empathy. really good empathy with things we could see. But then, you know, with the money I've spent on this cat, I'm sure I could have saved someone else's life or something. But I don't know that, and I don't know where they are, and I can't see them, so I'm sorry. But so that sucks. I kind of wish everything was better with our moral intuition so that we could do the right thing. But I can't help it. I love my cat. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I want to save my cat. I'm really sad. So what do you do? But we're hoping it will all work out. Okay. So that's the, I'll go ahead and just, oh, and then sorry. The other thing I wanted to say is friggin' doctors. And I count veterinarians in that. I mean, you know, maybe doctors sneer at them or something. I have no idea. I'm just making this up, this culture war that doesn't exist, or maybe it does. But, you know, they're amazing. And anyone who's taking, you know, spending all their life learning all this stuff, yeah, I'm sure they make $1 zillion, and that's good. I want them to make $1 zillion. And the fact that this woman, this vet we have, she's just great. She's fantastic. She just, like, I mean, I don't know why she had to take us through everything. I guess she wants to include, I guess people must like to feel included in the process. Like, I'm going to help, you know, she's giving me the lowdown on everything that it could possibly be and all the different, you know, and so it was this, and thought it might be this, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, what am I going to do? Like, oh yes, very excellent conclusions, doctor. I feel that, no, I disagree. It should be this. But no, anyway, it's nice. I guess people must like kind of hearing about it, and they want to feel like they're involved and all that. And I'm tempted to say, like, yeah, just do whatever. Just do, I mean, I don't have that much money, but just tell me roughly what something's going to cost and just do it. Yeah, you're the vet, you're the expert. I'm a really real believer in experts. You know, it's like if someone, especially at that level, you know, if someone, doctor or whatever, they know what they're doing. You don't have to involve yourself in all of their little things. Like, but anyway, it was just remarkable. And I tweeted about it kind of, but it's just so frustrating, again, how much better we are than God. Doctors just perform everything a doctor does, every single freaking thing, test, every, you know, little diagnostic thingy they do, all of that is a miracle. It's all just amazing that, you know, someone learned all this stuff. Also, every disease is like, well, it could show this, but it could not. It's impossible. I don't know how you even do it, because everything with the cat was like, well, it might be this. And I was like, well, he hasn't, you know, he's peeing a lot. And it's like, well, that could be this, this, and this. Or it could be all those things, but he also doesn't pee a lot. Like, it's impossible. I don't know how anyone does anything. Just because, you know, symptoms are, you can just be asymptomatic for certain things. But anyway, just really impressed with medicine. It's just remarkable. Everything humans do is so much better. I mean, all the good things, I guess, is so much better than stupid God. We have all these systems we've come up with for fixing things, making people better. It's just, it's incredible. I love it. Okay, so that being said, done with the cat business. Sorry about that for anyone who's a dog person, I guess. I don't know. now I got to talk about, I did the Imaginary Friends show, which hopefully you've listened to. It was good. It was great. That show's great. I like Jake a lot. I follow him on Twitter. He's a funny guy. Sorry. What am I trying to say here? So I hope you listen to it, but I wanted to say, there's a guest on there, CJ something. I forget his name. And he was he was a really nice guy. Everyone you meet, they're always like, oh, that's a cool guy. But he had written some things that I really disagreed with, like vehemently. The least of which I probably brought up on the show. And the thing was, he was a nice guy. He presented his stuff in a much less harsh way, I think, much less direct way than he did in his article that we reviewed. And so it wasn't appropriate for me to just go nuts and say, like, well, I, you know, everything you say is wrong and I hate you. No, I didn't need to get personal or anything, but I did voice some disagreement because his article was essentially, and everyone should check out the show and the episode and the article and everything. I'm sure it'll be linked on there if you go find it. His article was about atheism needs to just essentially vote Democrat, you know, start being political. The movement needs to be political. He thinks that wealth disparity is the biggest problem in the world and we need to, you know, atheists need to get on the right side of that and all this. And, you know, essentially I agree with a lot of his ideals and everything, but I just said, like, what's not, you know, atheism is not that. You wouldn't go up to PETA or, you know, any other group and say, like, hey, stop what you're doing and work on this wealth disparity problem. His argument was that, well, the opposite of atheists are these theocrats that are the Republican Party, and they want to, and that's why we need to fight it, because they're the ones who are promoting these policies, and that's sort of the opposite of us. And that's true, except that, like I said, then, you know, we can go ahead and atheists can go ahead and be a part of other groups who are political. That's fine. We just need atheism to be atheism, because anytime you do start to politicize it, there's going to be atheists who can't be atheists. It doesn't make, I mean, atheists should be able to be atheists, right? Like in a group, like, hey, I'm an atheist. I'm in the group called atheists. But once you add other beliefs that just have to be there, it's like, well, I'm an atheist, but I can't be in the atheist group. It seems kind of weird. I don't know. But anyway, that was like the least of my disagreements with him. And I just wanted to address this because I really disagree with it. He's one of those people who tosses around the Islamophobic term just casually. And I completely understand it. I'm a little sad that Jake didn't bring that up. And it's Jake's show. I didn't want to mess it up. Also, there's four people. I didn't want to dominate discussion or anything. There's a lot of people there. But I'm sad he didn't bring it up, because unlike the previous episode, or maybe the second to previous episode, they were just talking about how that term's not legitimate and all this stuff. They were talking about Islamophobia and people throwing around how much they hate it. And then here comes this guy who's written a ton about just how Islamophobic Sam Harris is and all this stuff. And I just wanted to address that because I think it's the most annoying goddamn thing you can do. It takes 3/10 of a second or whatever to say Islamophobe. Like, you can just say it, and then it takes you your life trying to effing deal with it. You know, like Sam Harris, you can just say, hey, you're racist. You hate Islam, you know, you're an Islamophobe. And then what can he do? It's like, no, you know, that's not, it's so much harder to deal with that pathetic, like annoying insult than it is to just say it. You can just say it. It's so easy. Oh, his petty, like childish understanding of Islam. He's an Islamophobe. And it's like, it's so easy for people, for liberal minded people to latch onto that. I'm like, ooh, I hate racism. I better hate this guy. You know, it's just cowardly. I think it's just annoying. It's too easy. But anyway, and it was just wrong. Like, the funny thing is, well, I didn't want to go into all this because this is not, I need to just have a different podcast where I talk about stuff like this, but whatever, I'm already into it, so I might as well. What I was going to say about it is, like, Sam Harris is concerned with, he also said, well, what he says in the article that I read, which was a different one than he talked about, might have been the same one. Anyway, he said, you know, Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, their version of their anti kind of Islam preoccupation that totally ignores foreign policy blunders of the past, you know, and they don't at all do that. It's just such an easy thing to say, but it's not true. That everything they say, they talk about foreign policy blunders. But another great quote about it is, like, what about American foreign policy has made it such that they have to treat their women terribly? Like, what? It's okay if you want to say terrorism is a result of American foreign policy. It isn't, but I'm sure it's a factor. And it's, you know, that's definitely legitimate. I would never say everything America has done is great, or other countries. But the idea that that's the cause of all the problems, it's just not right. It's just simplification. Anyway, I had more to say on that, but I just wanted to say that it is interesting, though, when you go on a show and a guy's a funny guy and he's joking with you and stuff, and it's so hard to be like, well, anyway, I disagree with everything you're saying. And, like, here's why. I kind of did. I definitely voiced some disagreement, but I didn't want to bring that up because that was a whole nother. Oh, the other thing was Jake was in a rush, you know, and I was worried about time. And so just wanted to explain that in case anyone had possibly known the situation and taken that as like a subtle, like I'm agreeing with, you know, because I didn't argue with it, I'm agreeing with his take on that. And that's not the case. I definitely disagree with it. And maybe I'll someday get a chance to talk to him again. I don't know. I doubt it. But anyway, he's a cool guy. And everyone on that show was awesome. It was really fun listening to it. Okay, let's get to the boring piece of S crap ball Bible. We're going to read 2 Chronicles 32. That was a long rant. So maybe I'll put it, I'll go back and record like a pre-warning. Hey, skip to 20 minutes. But those who didn't skip, I hope you enjoyed it. And oh yeah, please donate if you go to the Facebook, go to my website. There's a donate button, thompsonbible.com or facebook.com/TandTheB, all one word. And hit that donate button. It's all 100% is going to Mr. Kitty, favorite podcat. So thanks. I really appreciate it. Okay, after these things and the establishment thereof, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and entered into Judah and encamped against the fenced cities and thought to win them for himself. And when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib was come and that he was proposed to fight against Jerusalem, he took counsel with his princes and his mighty men to stop the waters of the fountains which were without the city, and they did help him. So there was gathered much people together who stopped all the fountains and the brook that ran through the midst of the land, saying, "Why should the kings of Assyria come and find much water?" Also he strengthened himself and built up all the wall that was broken and raised it up to the towers and another wall without and repaired Millo in the city of David and made darts and shields in abundance. And he set captains of war over the people and gathered them together to him in the street of the gate of the city and spake comfortably to them, saying, "Be strong and courteous, be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. After this did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, send his servants to Jerusalem. But he himself laid siege against Lachish and all his power with him, unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, and unto all Judah that were at Jerusalem, saying, "Thus saith Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do ye trust that ye abide in the siege in Jerusalem? Doth not Hezekiah persuade you to give over to yourselves to die by famine and thirst, saying, 'The Lord our God shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria'? Hath not the same Hezekiah taken away his high places and his altars, and commanded Judah and Jerusalem, saying, 'Ye shall worship before one altar and burn incense upon it'? Know ye not what I and my fathers have done to all the people of other lands? Were the gods of the nations of those lands in any ways able to deliver them their lands out of mine hand?'" So this is like the conqueror trying to intimidate the people who are, you know, besieged inside. He's saying like, good luck with that. Look at all these other lands that I did, and you guys are going to starve to death, blah, blah, blah. "Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers uttered?" And I can see the setup here, because he's saying like, well, their gods didn't save them. And then maybe they can say like, well, our God's the true God. "Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers utterly destroyed that could deliver his people out of mine hand, that your God should be able to deliver you out of mine hand?" Excuse me. "Now therefore, let not Hezekiah deceive you nor persuade you on this manner, neither yet believe him, for no god of any nation or kingdom was able to deliver his people out of mine hand and out of the hand of my fathers. How much less shall your God deliver you out of mine hand?" Quite a bit less, 100% less. "And his servants spake yet more against the Lord God and against his servant Hezekiah. He also wrote letters to rail on the Lord God of Israel and to speak against him, saying, 'As the gods of the nations of the—'" hold on, sorry, I gotta drag this to my other monitor. Let me see if I can read it. It's gonna be easier than— I'm like looking down over the mic. Okay, that's much easier. So let's move that window down there. But you guys can't see any of this, of course. Okay. Where was I? He also... I don't know. I think it was here. He also wrote letters to rail on the Lord God of Israel and to speak against... He wrote letters. To whom it may concern. The Lord God of Israel is crap, and he's not going to save you. And good luck. And you're going to die. Sincerely, me. Wait, who was it? Sennacherib. Sincerely, S-E-N-N... what is it? S-E-N-N-A-C-H-E-R-I-B. wrote letters to rail on. I like how formal he is. He's really starting... Did he hit up the social media? He's starting up a campaign of like, your God's not good enough to save you. You're dead. He did like sky writing. As the gods of the nations of other lands have not delivered their people out of mine hand, so shall not the God of Hezekiah deliver his people out of my hand. I like the structuring there. Hey, just like all these other gods didn't not deliver not these people out of not their my hand, so not shall your God not, yes, not, no, yes, deliver. It's like, I don't know what you're saying anymore, dude. I can't even. Then they cried with a loud voice in the Jews' speech. The Jews' speech. Unto the people of Jerusalem that were on the wall to affright them and to trouble them that they may take the city. And they spake against the God of Jerusalem as against the gods of other people of the earth, which were the work of the hands of men. Yeah, because we have the real God here. And for this cause, Hezekiah the king and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, prayed and cried to heaven. And the Lord sent an angel, which cut off all the mighty men of valor, and the leaders and captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth of his own bowels slew him there with a sword. Wait, what? I don't know what just happened. Thus, hold on. Sorry, I was kind of spacing out there. Okay, so they prayed, right? And the Lord sent an angel, which cut off all the mighty men. Okay, so he sent an angel to basically... The Assyrians were besieging, they're sieging them. And so the Lord sent an angel, and the angel just killed them all. Okay, I thought there was more to that. And when the king... this was what I missed. Sorry, I keep bumping this thing like a dummy. When the king, so the angel slew all the king's followers, right? And he's like, okay, never mind. I rescind my previous communications. I take back all those letters and I'm leaving. And so the king left. And then when he got home, I guess his sons slew him. So they're like, dude, you are terrible. And they just killed him. Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, who had a penchant for letter writing, and from the hand of all other, and guided them on every side. And many brought gifts unto the Lord of Jerusalem, and presents to Hezekiah the king of Judah, so that he was magnified in the sight of all the nations from thenceforth. In those days Hezekiah was sick to the death, and prayed unto the Lord, and he spake unto him and gave him a sign. But Hezekiah rendered not again according to the benefit done unto him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore there was wrath upon him and upon Judah and Jerusalem. What? Rendered not according to the benefit. Okay, so it's saying he didn't pay the Lord back in kind for saving him. And so he died. Notwithstanding him... Oh, no, he didn't die. I thought he was going to die, but I guess not. There was wrath upon them. Notwithstanding, Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon them in the days of Hezekiah. I like how that works. That's very scientific. Whoever wrote this book, Jesus Christ, I guess, was saying, yeah, he was bad. They're like doing, maybe this won't make any sense, but it's like a get out of jail free card for sins of the future. You know how they constantly blame when something bad happens, the Bible always has a reason. Like, well, it was because they didn't get rid of the high places, and therefore, you know, or something. Like, it always gives some reason, and therefore, this happened. They were, oh, war, like, you know, someone came and conquered. It always says something like that, right? Well, this was almost like a that for free. Like, they're storing one up. They're like, well, Hezekiah was not good enough, so the wrath of the Lord came upon him. But not in Hezekiah's lifetime, because he was pretty good. So it didn't hurt him at any time, you know, during his life. It's like they're just setting it up for later, for the next bad thing to happen. Ah, that was because of Hezekiah. Because it says, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon them in the days of Hezekiah. And Hezekiah had, not only that, Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor, and he made himself treasuries for silver and for gold. This is called a bad use of incentives, this would be bad parenting. If God were a parent, which he is, I guess, people would say, like, hey, you're doing a poor job because you're telling this guy he did something wrong, and then you're rewarding him and then saying, like, boy, I'm going to punish your grandkids for this. Like, how will behavior ever change if you threaten people that aren't even born yet with punishment? Anyway, and Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor. Oh, you know, did my mic get turned down? I'm wondering if it did. Sorry. Ooh, that's a little louder. A little louder. Check, check. Well, that sounds louder to me, but I'm not sure if it's too loud to you. I could almost turn stuff down. Check, check, check. Live sound checks. That's what T and the B does, baby. It's awesome. All right, I'm going to see how that sounds. I don't know. It might be better audio. It might be worse. Not sure. Yeah, I don't know. Adjusting. I'm a really bad podcaster. I'll be honest. I'm just not great at it. I do all these things live. I just don't feel like editing. Okay, I'm going to turn that down a bit. Let's, now the gain is going like crazy. How about I go like that? Okay, let's try that. Hopefully you guys could hear me that whole time. I assume you could, but all right, let's go with that. So, storehouses also for the increase of corn and wine and all oil, and stalls for all manner of beasts, and cotes, COTES, for flocks. I don't know what that word is. Interesting. Must be some old English thing. Moreover, he provided him cities and possessions of flocks. So God just gave him all this stuff. But it said just a second ago, he wasn't very good. God punished him. But he gave him all the stuff, and he never knew about the punishment. So it's ridiculous. It's just a dumb system. The same Hezekiah also stopped the upper water course of Gihon and brought it straight down the west side city of the city of David. And Hezekiah prospered in all his works. So everything he does, coming up roses. So he has no idea that he did something wrong. That's just ridiculous. Howbeit, in the business of the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent unto him to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land, God left him to try him, that he might know all that was in his heart. Now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah, blah, 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 and Hezekiah died. And Manasseh, now we're on Manasseh. Okay. We're on 33 now. We're going to read 32, 33, 34. Yeah, should have time for that. Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem, but did that which was evil on the side of the Lord, like unto the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. For he built again the high places which Hezekiah his father had broken down, and he reared up altars for Baalim, and made groves, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served them. Also he built altars in the house of the Lord, whereof the Lord had said, In Jerusalem shall my name be forever. And he built altars for all the host of the heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. And he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom, Also, he was observed times. Oh, sorry. He observed times and used enchantments and used witchcraft and dealt with the familiar spirit and with wizards. Wow, that's interesting. Just all that stuff existed, huh? And he wrought much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Yeah, that's what, because that's what people do. They know God exists. They know God's like pulling for them, and they go, I'm going to make God mad. That's what I'm going to do. And he set a carved image, the idol which he had made. This is why I think this is all written with a 2020 hindsight, you know, like they just put all these little events together and assigned meaning to them and all that. There's no way someone knew that they were God's chosen person and was like, I'm just going to do a bunch of stuff to piss God off. Why not? Yeah, whatever. No one would do that if they had all the facts. It's just ridiculous. And he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Also, he observed times. Oh, I already read that. I'm sorry. And he set a carved image. That's what I was reading. The idol which he had made in the house of God, of which God had said to David and Solomon, his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen before all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. Neither will I any more remove the foot of Israel from out of the land which I have appointed for your fathers, so that they will take heed to all that I have commanded them, according to the whole law and the statutes and the ordinances by the hand of Moses. So Manasseh made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to err and to do worse than the heathen, whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. Well, Lord, you better just kill them all, because it's just not working out. And the Lord spake to Manasseh and to his people, but they would not hearken. Wherefore the Lord brought up upon them the captains of the host of the king of Assyria, again, which took Manasseh among the thorns and bound him with fetters and carried him to Babylon. Wow. And when he was in affliction, he besought the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed unto him. And he was entreated of him and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. Now after the... Wait. Oh, so somehow God rescued him. It doesn't go into detail. Just says he's rescued somehow. I don't know. Now after this, he built a wall without the city of David on the west side of Gihon in the valley, even to the entering in at the fish gate, and compassed about Ophel and raised it up a very great height and put captains of war in all the fenced cities of Judah. And he took away the strange gods and the idol out of the house of the Lord and all the altars that he had built in the mount of the house of the Lord and in Jerusalem and cast them out of the city. And he repaired the altar of the Lord and sacrificed thereon peace offerings and thank offerings and commanded Judah to serve the Lord God of Israel. Nevertheless, the people did sacrifice still in the high places, yet unto the Lord their God only. Now, the rest of the acts of Manasseh and his prayer unto God and the words of the seers that spake to him in the name of the Lord God of Israel, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel, which if is a later book, I'm going to kill myself. His prayer also and how God was entreated of him and all his sins and his trespass and the places wherein he built the high places and set up groves and graven images before he was humbled. Behold, they are written among the sayings of the seers. So Manasseh slept with his fathers, and they buried him in his own house, and Amon his son reigned in his stead. Amon was 22 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 2 years in Jerusalem. But, guys, surprise, surprise, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, as did Manasseh his father, for Amon sacrificed unto all the carved images which Manasseh his father had made, and served them, and humbled not himself before the Lord, as Manasseh his father had humbled himself. But Amon had trespassed more and more, and his servants conspired against him and slew him in his own house. But the people of the land slew all them that conspired against the king Amon. I think I remember this. And the people of the land made Josiah his son king in his stead. Yeah, there was that plot, the gunpowder plot. No, it's a different plot. Okay, so we're on to chapter 34. Damn, this is a longer one. Oh, well. All right, quick water break. Yeah. Josiah was 8 years old. Yeah, he was like the child king they made, you know, because they didn't like the other guy. Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 130 years. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the ways of David his father, and declined neither to the right nor to the left. For in the eighth year of his reign, well, yeah, he's 8 years old. While he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of David, his father. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the groves and the carved images and the molten images. And they break down the altars of Baalim in his presence, and the images that were on high above them he cut down. And the groves, and the groves and the carved images and the molten images he break in pieces and made dust of them and strewed it upon the graves of them that had sacrificed unto them. And he burnt the bones of the priests upon their altars and cleansed Judah and Jerusalem. So he's just getting rid of everything. And so did he in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon, even unto Naphtali, with their mattocks round about. And when he had broken down the altars and the groves, and had beaten the graven images into powder, and snorted it, and cut down all the idols throughout all the land of Israel, he returned to Jerusalem. Now in the 18th year, when he was hardly a child, now in the 18th year of his reign, when he had purged the land and the house, he sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah, the governor of the city, and Joah, the son of Joahaz, the recorder, to repair the house of the Lord his God. And when they came to Hilkiah, the high priest, they delivered the money that was brought unto the house of God, which the Levites that kept the doors had gathered of the hand of Manasseh and Ephraim, and of all the remnant of Israel, and of all the Judah and Benjamin, and they returned to Jerusalem. And they put it in the hand of the workmen that had oversight of the house of the Lord, and they gave it to the workmen that wrought in the house of the Lord to repair and amend the house. Even to the artificers and the builders gave they it, to buy hewn stone and timber for couplings. I need to pick up some timber for couplings. The grocery store, I just remembered. I gotta write that down. And to the floor, the houses which the kings of Judah had destroyed. And the men did the work faithfully, and the overseers of them were Jahath and Obadiah. Just in case you were wondering, if you have a grievance, you need to take it to them. They were the foreman. They were the George Foreman of that operation. All this data that we don't need, all this information that is useless. Of the sons of Merari, and Zechariah and Meshulam, of the sons of the Kohathites to set it forward, and the other of the Levites, all that could skill of instruments of music. That's weird. I don't know what that... It's an interesting sentence. Also, they were over the bearers of burdens, and were overseers of all that wrought the work in any manner of service. And of the Levites there were scribes and officers and porters. And when they brought out the money that was brought into the house of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found a book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. And Hilkiah answered and said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah delivered the book to Shaphan. And Shaphan carried the book to the king and brought the king word back, saying, all that was committed to thy servants, they do it. And they have gathered together the money that was found in the house of the Lord and have delivered it into the hand of the overseers and to the hand of the workmen. And Shaphan the scribe told the king, saying, Hilkiah the priest hath given me a book. And Shaphan read it before the king. And it came to pass, when the king had heard the words of the law, that he rent his clothes. And the king commanded Hilkiah and Ahikam the son of Shaphan, Abdon son of Micah, and Shaphan the scribe, and everyone who was there, go inquire of the Lord for me, and for them that are left in Israel and Judah, concerning the words of the book that is found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is poured out upon us, because our fathers have not kept the word of the Lord. So they didn't even know it. So they found, to do all that is written in this book. So they found the book, they didn't even know it existed. And the guy's like, what the hell is all this? We haven't been doing any of this stuff. And so this whole time they didn't even know, well, I don't know when it was lost, but this whole time they didn't know what they were doing. So couldn't God have been like, hey, check under that cupboard there. That's, just kind of, hey, I didn't look over there. There's a book that tells you everything. Like, why is God so personally offended by stuff they didn't even know they were doing? Anyway, and Hilkiah and they that the king had appointed went to Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, the son of Tikvath, the son of Hazra, keeper of the wardrobe. Now she dwelt in Jerusalem in college. And they spake to her that effect. And she answered them, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, tell ye the man that sent you to me, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon this place and upon the inhabitants thereof, even all the curses that are written in the book which they have read before the king of Judah, because they have forsaken me and have burned incense unto other gods, that they might provoke me to anger with all the works of their hands. Therefore my wrath shall be poured out upon this place and shall not be quenched. And as for the king of Judah, who sent you to inquire of the Lord, so shall you say unto him, thus saith the Lord God of Israel concerning the words which thou hast heard. Because thine heart was tender, and thou didst humble thyself before God, when thou heardest his words against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, and humbledest thyself before me, and didst rent thy clothes and weep before me, I have even heard thee also, saith the Lord. Behold, I will gather thee to thy fathers, and thou shalt be gathered to thy grave in peace. Neither shall thine eyes see all the evil that I will bring upon this place and upon the inhabitants of the same. So they brought the king the word again. Then the king sent and gathered together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. Again, it's another case of like, hey, you're pretty cool. I'll let you die before my wrath is upon you, everybody. Then the king sent and gathered all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. And the king went up to the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the priests, and the Levites, and all the people, great and small, and he read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant that was found in the house of the Lord. And the king stood in his place, and made a covenant before the Lord, to walk after the Lord, and to keep his commandments, and his testimonies, and his statutes, with all his heart, and with all his soul, and to perform heart and soul, and to perform the words of the covenant which are written in this book. And he caused all that were present in Jerusalem and Benjamin to stand to it. And the inhabitants of Jerusalem did according to the covenant of God, the God of their fathers. And Josiah took away all the abominations out of all the countries that pertained to the children of Israel, and made all that were present in Israel to serve, even to serve the Lord their God. And all his days they departed not from following the Lord, the God their fathers. Well, that should be the end of the Bible then, right? Because everything was fine. Okay, that's the end of our reading. Yeah, thanks for sitting through, well, maybe you didn't, I don't know. Thanks for listening. And, again, please donate if you can. 100% of the proceeds go to Mr. Kitty, your favorite podcat. May he live at least another year. I don't know. Who knows? I'm going to be sad, but, I think who knows? Maybe he'll come through, have a nice long life. It's definitely possible. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at TandTheB and get on the Facebook, please. And thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next episode.